Finders Keepers, written by Spacewall and read by Flower Parish. This is a Star Wars fic rated for general audiences, featuring the central pairing Cody/Obi-Wan Kenobi, and a plethora of side or background pairings. This is part one of the Lost and Found series. Summary. Your soulmate finds everything you ever lose. Obi-Wan has long been tormented by Anakin's habit of losing things, but he's never had a soulmate of his own to lose things to before. Cody's never been sure about whether he had a soulmate or not. Maybe he'll find out over the course of the war.
Time, curious time, give me no compasses, give me no signs. Were there clues I didn't see? Isn't it just so pretty to think all along there was some invisible string tying you to me?
Ooh. Chapter 1. Cody and Obi-Wan. Anakin lost things all the time throughout his teenage years. Padme did too. There was a regular stream of packages between Naboo and Coruscant to return various misplaced items. They both had the easy certainty of people who knew that, no matter where they put something down, it would turn up eventually in the hands of their soulmate. "I will tie that boy's lightsaber to his hand if I have to," Obi-Wan said, after the sixth time in 7 years that it had been returned from Naboo, compliments of the Queen. Quinlan patted his shoulder sympathetically. "I'm sure he's only a little more trouble than Ayla was at that age, if you factor in everything. At least Anakin hasn't discovered boys yet. And Ayla doesn't have a soulmate. I'm sure it all balances out." "Didn't," Quinlan corrected, almost absentmindedly. The interruption caught Obi-Wan off guard. "I'm sorry?" "Ayla didn't have a soulmate when she was my Padawan. She does now, as of 6 months ago, actually." "Oh?" That was new. It was rare for soulmates to have such a wide age gap as this indicated. Since the average person started losing things to their soulmate in their crib, perhaps a few years later for cultures that didn't give babies anything to lose, Ayla's soulmate must have been at least a decade younger than her, more likely two. They've lost a pair of underpants and a bar of soap so far, but she's sure. Something in Obi-Wan's chest had grown tight. Probably platonic, then, if they're so much younger than her. Quinlan shrugged. "You would think that, wouldn't you? But the size of the underwear suggests a human or near-human adult. It was almost like a miracle from the Force. She was knighted, and a week later she was finding strange underwear on her bed." "Whereas you didn't need any help from the Force to find strange underwear on your bed after you were knighted." He gave Obi-Wan a playful shove, but something in his expression grew more serious. "If you need someone to talk to about Anakin being a Jedi with a close soulmate, I'm not really your man." Quinlan's soulmate had died in a speeder accident as a child. "But I could ask Tholm to talk to him. Him and Master Saw do all right." Obi-Wan shook his head. "It's all right. He'll be all right. Padme has a good head on her shoulders. I can tell that by the quality of the political treatises that wind up in my couch cushions." Quinn smiled at him. "Well, if Ayla needs any advice, maybe I can send her to Anakin. He probably went through all the stages of a normal soulmate identification." Actually, from what Obi-Wan knew, Anakin's childhood had mostly been marked by having the expensive, fancy things that Padme lost, stolen by the people who enslaved him. But he had good enough sense not to share those two private details with Quinlan. "Force preserve us from Anakin trying to give anyone advice. Send her on to Tholm." And so, the years passed. Some people marked the passage of time in inadvertent gifts from their loved ones. Some people marked it in years since those gifts stopped. Obi-Wan marked it in days until Padme would arrive on Coruscant to assume her seat as senator. Every pilot flying the Naboo-Coruscant route was going to have to tighten their belts with Anakin and Padme on the same world again. to the election of Senator Amidala and the removal of one of my friend's many worries, Bant said, and raised her glass to him. Don't worry, Obi-Wan returned. I'm sure Anakin will find plenty of new and exciting things for me to worry about soon enough. He wished, sometimes, that Bant could have been his soulmate, the way she and Garen shared a platonic bond. But other times, the whole business of having a soulmate, the losing and the finding, seemed a terrible amount of bother. It wasn't even happening to Obi-Wan, and it bothered him. But, of course, that was before, true to his word, he found himself saddled the pile of new and exciting worries in the shape of a galaxy-wide civil war. Compared to that, Anakin and Padme's penchant for losing things seemed like a rather trivial matter. Lots of clones had soulmates. The trouble was telling what, exactly, belonged to whose soulmate. If you found something in your bunk, sure, it was probably from your soulmate. But if you found something in the freshers, or in the hallway, or in a training room, it was impossible to know whether it was yours or someone else's, because there was always, always a Vaughn around. Sometimes, though, it was impossible to miss. Oh no, Bly said, voice growing faint. Oh no, she didn't. She didn't what? Fox asked, coming up on his knees to stick his head over Bly's bunk. Upon seeing whatever it was that Bly was seeing, he echoed, Oh no, she did. Cody finally looked up from his training manual. Bly's face and ears had flushed dark, and he had his head buried in his hands. His soulmate left him a note, Fox announced, delighted in a mischievous way that meant an opportunity for teasing or gossip had arisen. Bly was one of those rare clones who everyone was completely certain had a soulmate. She seemed to lose a decent amount of things, and had since they were children. But she'd never managed to lose something with real information on it before. She lost some flimsy. Fox shook his head. No, she stitched words into her underwear. Into every single pair of underwear, presumably, because you can't lose something on purpose. You have to wait and lose it by accident. Aw, sick, she didn't. Bly, mumbling into his hands, said, It gets worse. She says that she didn't even know she had a soulmate until I lost my underwear 3 months ago. I guess before that, everything else I had to lose had already been hers to begin with. It was hard to lose anything when you didn't own anything to begin with. The only things that most clones could really call theirs were either part of their bodies, tattoos, piercings, or gifts from their soulmates. Does she say anything about herself? Bly shook his head. No, probably a risk to personal safety to lose stuff with real information, just that she looks forward to meeting me. For the moment, Bly seemed too embarrassed by the fact that his soulmate was teasing him to realize that his Vaughn were going to tease him about this for the rest of his natural life. It was a good thing he already had a name, or they probably all would have called him Pants. Actually, Griffith. Cody might call him Pants anyways. It really was just too good of an opportunity to pass up. And that was how it was for years. It became obvious who had a soulmate outside, Bly, Wolf, Fox, and who had a Vaughn for a soulmate, Waxer and Boyle for two, and who either didn't have one or didn't have one they could identify. Cody, for one. And as they trained, and worked, and kept their heads down, they tried not to think about that. Cody found some things, over the years, but never in his bunk. He found robes in the fresher, and a weird rock in the weapons room, and a rather lovely blue and silver flower, which he was sad to give up to the collection of unidentified soulmate stuff. Once or twice, he found things that definitely belonged to other people's soulmates, a sock with a note on it for Bly, and a binder full of flimsy about hyperspace trade protocols for Fox. That one was exciting, because it had a few dozen names on the inside cover, one of whom might, possibly, be Fox's soulmate. And then, the Jedi finally showed up to collect them, and Geonosis happened. Cody didn't go. He stayed on Kamino and waited, knowing that somewhere out there in the universe, his Vaughn were dying. Still, in spite of his remaining on Kamino, something very odd did happen to Cody. Once, not long after everyone left, he was walking in the halls and, at the exact same moment, him and a Vaughn who was too young to fight, six maybe, spotted a flash of silver in a corner. "Hey," said the Fod, and grabbed the object, pulling it forth. Whoa! Suddenly, he was holding a beam of light. Cody had never seen it before, and he knew exactly what it was. "Turn that off immediately." The kid looked disappointed, but he did as ordered. "Come on, Vodka, we'll turn this into soulmate collections." "But Vod, it's probably one of ours, right?" Cody's heart twisted. "And if you find anything else obviously belonging to the same person, you can go back and claim it. Protocol's protocol." Someone here had a soulmate who was a Jedi. Cody, who was fairly certain he didn't even have a soulmate, knew it wasn't him. "I have a gift for you, Obi-Wan," Shaak Ti said, holding out to him a drawstring bag with the very familiar dimensions of a lightsaber. "I'm sorry?" She offered him a smile. "I'm not your soulmate, don't worry. The cadets on Kamino have a policy of collecting soulmate objects when they aren't clear whose soulmate it's from. Usually, these things sit in storage until a clone figures out that it belongs to their soulmate, or until it returns itself to the original soulmate. It's really quite amazing, and I don't think they need any intervention from us to help figure it out. I liberated this one because it didn't need to sit in storage. I thought you might want it back." He already knew what it was before he drew from the bag a lightsaber that he'd carried for nearly a decade. A weapon that he'd last seen not on Kamino, but on Geonosis. "Shaak." Her expression softened. "Congratulations, Obi-Wan. You have a soulmate. If it makes you feel better, I saw one of Plo's drinking straws in there too, but I think I'll leave that for him and his soulmate to figure out." Obi-Wan clutched the familiar hilt in his hand and felt everything he'd ever believed about himself shatter around him. He would have liked to talk to Quinlan about it, or Bant and Garen, or maybe even to Ayla, who was in a very similar position but had known about it for much longer. But there was a war on, and Obi-Wan didn't get to choose who he was going to see. In the end, he gritted his teeth and went to Anakin. To his credit, his Padawan didn't laugh at him. There was a green silk scarf and a gold bracelet sitting on his bedside table, and as Obi-Wan spoke, he reached over and fidgeted with the scarf. "What am I going to do now?" Anakin wove the scarf between his metal fingers. "Take up Jerkai?" "Anakin!" His Padawan huffed a small laugh. "Sorry, it's just... if anyone in the galaxy deserved this sort of miracle, it's you, Master. All those years of teasing me for having Padme to find my lightsaber, and here you are, with two lightsabers to your name." When Obi-Wan didn't respond to the jab, he added, "This is a good thing, Master, really. I had become rather used to knowing I didn't have a soulmate." "Of course you did," Anakin said, uncharacteristically sensible. "Who wouldn't? But now you know you do. And they'll make you happy. Meeting Padme was the best thing in the galaxy." Obi-Wan thought of Satine, whose soulmate had once tried to kill her for the restoration of traditional Mandalore. "It's never a sure thing." He leant forward on his knees, wrapping the scarf around his wrist in such a way that it covered the line between flesh and metal. "Of course it isn't sure. Nothing ever is. But look, I thought Padme would resent me for being her soulmate. Because she's basically the most amazing person ever, and she lost so many things that were so valuable, and I couldn't hold on to any of them for her. Because that's what soulmates are supposed to do, right? Hold on to the things that you lose. I failed that. But she didn't resent me. She didn't resent me because she's my soulmate, and sometimes even if everything goes wrong, it can work out. But should it? The power dynamics implicit in having a clone for a soulmate..." Anakin shrugged. "So, maybe it's platonic. Or it isn't. Just do what regular people do when they know they have a soulmate. Learn to stop counting your belongings and trust that everything will turn up eventually." Cody's general didn't have a soulmate. This was obvious by the sheer amount of lost property of his that managed to turn up in Cody's possession. Usually, as it happened, in the middle of battles. Cody had returned his lightsaber, not the same one he'd found on Kamino, what felt like a dozen times, and his robe at least twice as often. "Ah, thank you, Cody," General Kenobi said, plucking the lightsaber out of his hand. "Who found it this time?" The answer had been Waxer once, Rex once, and Boyle twice, but this time, like most times, "Me again, sir." Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow at him. "How many times is that now, Commander?" Cody forced himself to meet his eyes. "Too many, General." The expression on his general's face was a mystery, utterly unreadable. "Cody." Both of their comms went off at once, and the conversation was forgotten about. "You teased me for 6 times in 7 years, Anakin said, perched on the wing of his personal fighter. "How many is that now, Master? 6 times in 7 months, and you're still not sure?" "Shut up, Anakin." But the truth was, Anakin was right. The evidence piled up and up, but Obi-Wan never found a single thing of Cody's, or of anyone else's, in return. He was increasingly starting to wonder if it were possible for him to be Cody's, but for Cody not to be his. Rex pounded his fist on the table hard, once, to get everyone's attention. As all of 79s turned to him, he said, "Come on, Vare, the floor is Fox's, for now." Fox set his glass down on the bar and stood. "Thank you, Rex. Now, it's a rare occasion these days that all of us are in the same room together, even if some of us had to be here by holocom." He raised a glass to Wolf, who nodded. "But this is a rare occasion in general, and it's not the only thing in general." Bly already had his head in his hands, which was an excellent sign of how the evening was going. "I was asked to give this speech because I was a witness to the excellent moment when our very own brother, Pants, was given that very name." And so, Fox told the story, Bly sinking lower and lower in his seat as he went, and the crowd getting more and more rowdy. "And now, siblings mine, our dear, shame-faced, awkward brother is marrying this very woman. Tomorrow. Assuming he doesn't drop dead right here in front of us." "I have a sneaking suspicion," a too familiar voice cut in from the doorway, "that Ayla would prefer if he didn't." The entire bar, nearly as one, turned to stare at General Kenobi and General Voss in the doorway. Voss raised a hand and offered them all a single, sarcastic wave. Obi-Wan continued, "Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome to the portion of the evening where, as is Twi'lek tradition, the bride's family kidnaps the groom." One of Bly's men put his hand up. "Sir, are we supposed to resist this kidnapping?" Voss laughed. "No, Pitch. Not unless he's marrying her against his will. It's just considered good luck for one soulmate to find the other before the wedding. You know, that old legend where if you end up losing yourself, your soulmate will find you. All very silly, very romantic." Voss raised his glass. "To Commander Bly, Pants, Secura." Cody raised his glass, along with his brother's, and echoed the toast. General Voss dragged Bly off, but, to Cody's surprise, General Kenobi stayed and ordered a drink. He sat with Cody, Fox, and Wolf's hologram. Rex, who'd been with them, wandered off to chat with Kix about something. "So," the general asked, tone friendly and light, "Bly's known about Ayla for a long time." Everyone relaxed when they realized he wasn't here to talk about the war. "Yeah," Fox said, "as long as any of us can remember, anyways. It was hard to tell what stuff belonged to which brother sometimes, but with Bly it was always pretty distinct, and she lost a good amount of stuff. More than my soulmate does. I can never figure out what's theirs anymore, working at the Senate. I find documents and papers all the time, just like I always did, but now they're usually supposed to be there." "I remember when Ayla first found something of Bly's," the general said, leaning back in his seat in a way that made Cody painfully aware of how attractive he was. He wished, sometimes, that the lightsaber he'd found on Kamino was his general's. But it wasn't. He'd found General Kenobi's lightsaber so many times, and it was not the one he'd found on Kamino. "That must have been a shock for her," Wolf said, rather mildly. The general nodded. "It was, for all of us. There have been an unusually high number of Jedi in the temple in the last 40 years or so, who never had soulmates, even as children. The general consensus among us was that we were merely unlucky, but, well, it turns out all of us were rather luckier than we knew. Us, Cody found himself asking, hoping and not hoping all at once. He had no evidence that he even had a soulmate, but he thought about the lightsaber he'd found all those months ago in that hallway on Kamino. Surely, if Obi-Wan named the Jedi who had Vade for soulmates, the owner of that blade would be on the list. They would be. And if anything Cody had ever found belonged to his soulmate, he was sure it was that. The general smiled. At least a dozen Jedi, all told, although I haven't seen confirmation that changed for everyone. It did for Ayla and Master Koon. Everyone looked rather pointedly at Wolf. And myself, of course. All eyes were on him. Cody's heart was lodged somewhere in his throat, and he forced himself to speak past it. I didn't know you had a VOD for a soulmate, sir. He looked rather rueful. Yes, well, I didn't know either for many years. Whoever it is the most meticulous person that I've ever met. I haven't found a single thing of theirs that I'm aware of. Not once. That's a problem for all of us, sir, Waxer said, dropping into a seat Rex had vacated. Boyle stood at his shoulder. We don't have a lot of things to lose. Then he frowned. Hang on, if they never lose anything, how do you know they're a VOD? General Kenobi smiled. Something I lost was returned to me. After more than 3 decades of complete silence, I'm sure you can imagine how surprised I was to have a lightsaber I'd lost on Geonosis returned to me from Kamino. A deathly quiet swept over the room as everyone who'd been eavesdropping on their conversation, which was most of the bar, in fact, turned to look at Cody. They all knew the story. Everyone had been intrigued by a clone finding a lightsaber during the Battle of Geonosis. Popular assumption, until General T had claimed it from storage, had been that whoever it belonged to was dead. Cody hadn't allowed himself to believe it. Couldn't allow himself to believe it of one of the only things that had ever so utterly and completely felt like his. Once more, he made himself speak. That lightsaber, sir. Obi-Wan glanced down at the blade on his hip. No. I'd already made this one by the time the other was returned to me, and it felt wrong in some way to pick it up again. Perhaps I'm saving it for a rainy day, so to speak. You lose this lightsaber enough that it's probably best you have a backup. Cody's throat was so dry. He took a sip of his drink, but since it was alcoholic, it didn't really help. The general had to have noticed how oppressively quiet the room around them had become. General Kenobi leaned forward, brilliant eyes fixed on Cody with the same intensity he gave to Ventress or any of their other foes. He was utterly terrifying like this, and utterly wonderful too. And yet, it always finds its way back to me somehow. Cody was going to die, right there and then. He was such a complete and total idiot. How many times had he handed that blade back to its rightful owner? How many times? Get a room, you two, Wolf said, and the tension in the room broke, just like that, as everyone started to laugh. Against the backdrop of Vade laughing, Cody found, suddenly, that General Kenobi's hand was in his, and he was being pulled to his feet. Is this another kidnapping, sir? Waxer called, as they fled the bar together. He'll be returned to you in one piece, Obi-Wan promised, and then he dragged Cody out into the night. I was right, Master. You owe me so much for this. Obi-Wan grabbed Cody's blaster from the ground and fired the first shot directly into the chest of the droid in front of him. Now is not the time, Anakin. There was a gold bracelet around Anakin's wrist that seemed a little too tight, even on the loosest setting. The light glinted off of it as he spun his lightsaber artfully through a row of droids. Maybe a double date? Not ever, Anakin. That was the wrong lightsaber, Cody realized, abruptly. Maul hadn't noticed that Obi-Wan was holding the wrong lightsaber, but Cody knew both blades well enough to tell the difference, even at this distance. It was his old one, the one he'd lost on Geonosis. The question was, why? You couldn't lose things on purpose. That was one of the essential rules of soulmates. But Obi-Wan had found it very easy to lose his lightsaber in battle a dozen times before. Why not now, when it would be useful? Come on, Cody thought. Come on. He felt a familiar cylinder pressed against the side of his boot and nudged the Duchess of Mandalore, his co-hostage, with his shoulder. Fortunately for all three of them, she was a perceptive woman who, for all her peaceful ways, had seen a great deal of war and violence. Critically, unlike Cody, her hands had been cuffed in front of her. Ah, the Duchess exclaimed, dramatically, and collapsed to the ground, covering the lightsaber with her body. Get up, Maul commanded, and from the look of sudden pain that crossed her face, he struck her in the Force. Obi-Wan started forward, but stopped as Cody met his eyes and shook his head once, no. I'm getting up, she said, rather weakly, and, the very instant Maul turned around, the Duchess stabbed him in the back. They arrived back on Coruscant, after the end of the war, to a scene of complete and utter chaos. Four Jedi Masters were critically wounded, though all were expected to live. The Chancellor of the Republic was dead, and he'd been a Sith. Anakin Skywalker had achieved a miracle previously only heard of in fiction. Nobody would have believed the story if Master Windu hadn't testified to the fact when they pulled him out of his Bacta tank. The Chancellor opened his mouth, Windu said, and Skywalker vanished, completely vanished. He showed up again half an hour later with Amidala in tow. I'm sure Qui-Gon would have something very smug to say about the Chosen One right now. Windu grimaced, and his left hand spasmed. The lightning had done terrible things to his nervous system before he'd killed the Sith. He's already being smug for himself. You don't have to do it for him. What happened to Skywalker would almost have been funny if the idea of him having quite literally lost himself wasn't so existentially terrifying. Do you think that could happen to a normal person? I mean, to a non-Jedi? Obi-Wan huffed a laugh and leaned into the way Cody was carting fingers through his hair. You don't need to pretend Anakin is a normal person, even for a Jedi. He never has been, and his relationship with Padme has always been unusually close. They both lose things very easily, and have since they were children. A particular miracle, given Anakin's circumstances. Padme's been finding wires and bolts in her dress pockets since she was 10. Cody wasn't good at losing things, even now, knowing they'd always come to Obi-Wan eventually. But Bly was, and Wolf was certainly better than Cody, if not so easy in his happiness as Bly. Could it happen to someone else who had a Jedi for a soulmate? Obi-Wan closed his eyes, pressed closer to Cody. I doubt it. Anakin is uniquely powerful, he and Padme are uniquely connected, but also, it is a rare thing to lose yourself so completely and totally as Anakin did in that moment. It must have happened to some fortunate Jedi before. The stories must have come from somewhere. But I hope, very much, that it never happens to anyone ever again. To be so totally absent from yourself that you could vanish. It was an awful thing to contemplate. Cody couldn't even regularly lose his socks to Obi-Wan, let alone his entire person. Will he be okay? I very much hope so. He will, I suspect, need a great amount of support. From Padme, most of all, but also from me and from Rex and Ahsoka, if Satine will deign to return them to us. Cody was fairly certain his little brother was having an affair with the Duchess of Mandalore. They'll both be back in a heartbeat, if Anakin asks. I think Satine has been good for Ahsoka after what Barriss did to her. It seems a shame to break them up now. It was a terrible thing to be betrayed by your soulmate. Guidance on that was something neither Anakin nor Obi-Wan could have given her. Something tells me that she and Rex will always be welcome on Mandalore, if they'd like. Oh, Rex in particular, Obi-Wan teased, amusement coloring his voice. So you picked up on that, too. I've known Satine for longer than you've been alive, you know. It was rather obvious. Yes, well, I'm sure you know exactly what she looks like when she's falling for someone. Obi-Wan laughed and turned around to kiss him on the lips. They're all going to be all right, you know. I really do believe that. Cody kissed him back before replying, I do too. A year and a half later, Obi-Wan found a gold ring inside his boot. It was impossible to say whether it had turned up there by accident or on purpose. End of chapter 1.
And isn't it just so pretty to think all along there were some invisible string tying you to me?
Chapter 2, The Supporting Cast. Bly knew that the general was his soulmate from the very first second he saw her. It wasn't hard to tell. She dressed in the exact sort of clothes his soulmate lost, she was a Twi'lek like his soulmate, and, more to the point, she looked at the ribbon he had tied around his bracer with recognition. He'd taken to wearing it for exactly this purpose, and he was rather gratified to know that it had worked. Bly, he introduced himself, offering her his hand, the one with the ribbon attached. Aayla Secura, she said, and gave him a smile that could have outshone whole galaxies. I think you have something of mine. A few somethings, and some that shouldn't be shared around polite company. Calling his brothers polite was, perhaps, a stretch. She gave him a rather wicked grin. I could say the same for you, Commander Bly. Of course, I'd be perfectly willing to share them in my quarters later, if you'd like. He'd been waiting his entire life to meet this woman. It would be my pleasure. Then I look forward to seeing you there. Having Garen as a soulmate had always been one of the best things that had ever happened to Bant, but it was harder now. They'd always known that there was a risk in having another Jedi for a soulmate. Growing up around Qui-Gon and Tall made that fact impossible to miss. But there was a difference between the abstract risk and the knowledge that they were both going into a war zone every single day. And so were all of their friends, their family. A list floated around in her head of everyone she risked losing. Ciri, Obi-Wan, Nadar, Master Kit, Garen. All of them were in the war every single day. There was a chance of losing any of them to it. She reached into her desk to retrieve a datapad and get her mind off things, and came up with a Galactic Standard 6-function hyperdrive maintenance wrench instead. It was as good a reminder as anything that they weren't dead yet. They'd been walking for a few minutes when Bly thought to ask, General Kenobi isn't coming back with us. General Voss laughed. No, I believe he's biting his belt buckle, so to speak, and going to do something he promised me he would do a long time ago. Since Voss had brought it up, Bly asked, And what's that? Talk to the person who is, in all likelihood, his soulmate, Voss said, as though this wasn't shocking. General Kenobi's soulmate is a Vod? Oh, certainly. The difficulty is in getting him to admit to who. Bly was already running the population of the bar through his mind. Neither Wolf nor Fox, not Rex, unless Kenobi had some very questionable and surprising taste in literature. Waxer and Boyle were each other's. Well, there was one candidate among his closest brothers who everyone assumed had a Jedi for a soulmate, even if he was in denial about it. And from what Voss said, denial fit perfectly. So, he's Cody's then? Voss stopped dead in his tracks and looked at Bly. Does Cody know? The lightsaber thing isn't very subtle, but Obi-Wan is convinced it isn't reciprocal. He never finds anything in return. Cody always was too organized for his own good. Even Fox knew the value of allowing his socks to disappear on occasion for his soulmate's reassurance. Cody's probably in denial about it. He never thought he had a soulmate growing up. Voss shook his head. Well, that makes two of them. A thought occurred to Bly that probably would have come sooner if he were less tipsy. How the criff did you get General Kenobi to promise to confess before he's certain? Voss laughed. Two words. Good bet. What did you bet on? Well, we've long debated which of us has the more troublesome Padawan. It used to be who was more trouble, but now that they're knighted and fighting a war, we debate who's less trouble. I finally decided to put a number on it and bet that Ayla would be married and settled down before Skywalker is. Bly had to run the sentence through his head a few times, and it still didn't make any sense that Voss would have won that bet. I thought Senator Amidala and General Skywalker were already married. Oh, they are. Have been for years, I think. But Skywalker has more hang-ups than a holocall spammer, so he won't admit that it's reached that level of commitment. I think he thinks it keeps her safe or something stupid like that. Anyways, Obi-Wan was sure Anakin would admit to it, and he was sure Ayla wouldn't make that sort of commitment. Well, I know Ayla better than he does, and Skywalker is frankly worse than either of us gave him credit for, so I won. Bly had been surprised, too, by the idea that Ayla would want to spend the rest of her life with him. They would always be soulmates, of course, but there was a whole galaxy out there, and Ayla could have had anything she wanted in it. He had nothing to offer someone as skilled and brilliant and beautiful as Ayla Secura. He knew that very well. She was a warrior and a pilot and a scholar, and she could make more ribald jokes than any of his Vade, and he utterly adored her. Credit for your thoughts, Voss asked, as they stepped into the shuttle bus and he paid the fare for both of them. Why the criff is she marrying me, Voss? The Jedi's gloved hand was suddenly on his shoulder, studying him as the vehicle lifted off. You should ask her that, and you should call me Quinlan. As of tomorrow, we're family. Bly had a family of millions. Why did the addition of one more feel so significant? Thank you, Quinlan. He smiled at Bly with a joy that was so much like Ayla's. For two people who shared no blood, not even that of the same species, they looked remarkably alike sometimes. For the record, Bly, I think she married you because you've been making her happy since the day you left her your underwear. Not that again. Bly really was never going to live that down. I didn't do that on purpose. No, but you did learn to embroider so you could return her notes. That meant a great deal to her at the time. And to me. To you? Bly asked him. He thought he detected surprisingly strong emotion for a Jedi, but Quinlan had always been surprising, to Ayla's frequent dismay. Ayla Secura is the person in this world most worthy of happiness. She deserved someone willing to do that sort of mad, harebrained romantic thing with her. When I learned how little you and your kin had to lose, that made me realize, even more profoundly, how much trust you placed in her just from those notes. She deserves that love. Bly was keenly aware of how hot his face had grown, and he would have buried his head in his hands if he wasn't worried that he'd fall over if he let go of the pole. I adore her. Don't worry, the feeling is mutual. At a glance from Bly, he added, Jedi intuition. I cannot believe that Obi-Wan Kenobi upstaged our wedding. I absolutely cannot believe that man. Yeah, but it's sort of expected for him, isn't it? He's almost as bad as Skywalker on the battlefield. Imagine how I feel getting upstaged by Cody. Cody! But it was worth it to see the look on Anakin's face when they walked in together. That shock and then total glee. And you haven't even seen the footage Wolf recorded of when everyone in 79's figured it out the night before. The look on Fox's face. And is that something you have access to, Commander Secura? It is indeed, Share. Satine loathed the war and violence that had become as much a sigil of her people as the Darksaber itself was. She loathed them with every fiber of her being. And yet, as Maul ranted at Obi-Wan and she stood there beside his soulmate, blood running down her face, she wanted the Sith to die. For everything he'd done to her people, to her friends, she wanted him dead. Satine's soulmate had betrayed her a very long time ago. They'd both learned to stop sending any well-meaning gifts soon after, cataloging every belonging of value with the utmost care. But in that moment where Cody nudged her, and she glanced down to see the lightsaber resting at their feet, she thought she understood exactly what it would have felt like to have a soulmate who loved her. "Ah!" she gasped, and fell to the floor, covering the hilt with her skirt. "Get up!" the Darjeti commanded her, and, when Satine didn't move, there was a feeling like nails scratching across her face, opening the wound on the right side of her forehead further. Blood dripped down onto her skirt, and Satine wished, fiercely, that she was wearing something more practical than this. But it served its purpose well, letting her bring her cuffed hands to the hidden hilt without the Darjeti noticing it. She hoped all her years of friendship with Obi-Wan had taught her enough to let her wield it. "I'm getting up," Satine told Maul, allowing the deep exhaustion she felt seep into her voice. He turned back to Obi-Wan, never for a second imagining that the woman behind him was armed just the same as the Jedi before him was. Satine found her fingers drawn instinctively to the button that ignited the blade, and, rising to her feet, she drove it through the heart of the man who'd tried to destroy her. Many, many people had tried to destroy Satine Kryze over the years, and all of them had failed. Somehow, it transpired, when all was said and done, that they left her alone, sitting in her walk-in closet with Bo-Katan. Satine wasn't sure the last time they'd been alone together. The Darksaber sat, unlit, on the table where Satine usually did her makeup in the morning. Bo's helmet lay beside it. "Do you think it counts?" Satine asked her sister, and then hissed at the stinging sensation of her cut being sanitized. The Darjeti was never worthy of wielding the Darksaber. He was no true Mandalorian. Bo-Katan switched over to a Bacta spray, trying to work it into the portion of the wound beneath Satine's hairline. "And me?" Satine asked, in no mood for further games or surprises. "Am I worthy, or should I be expecting a challenge from you in the morning?" The Darksaber, the helmet, and all of Satine's makeup shook as Bo slammed the spray bottle and her fist down on the table. When Satine looked up at her, she realized, with some shock, that her sister was crying. "Bo?" "Dekutla Utrikov," Bo snapped, voice raw. "Why do you have to do things like this? Run around with Jatise. He isn't even your soulmate. He's been better to me than Ty ever has. Better than you too, Vod." Bo squeezed her fists tight, but didn't hit anything. A moment later, she grabbed the edge of the table so hard the wood creaked. "I don't understand you at all. You devote yourself to that Jaiti, and then you take up a weapon to save his soulmate? You preach peace, and then you kill a Darjeti?" Satine sat back and let her finish. It was cathartic, in a way. Bo was expressing all of that day's fear and anger and trauma for both of them. "You almost died today, Satine. And for what? For your dream of peace? And you didn't, and you killed a Darjeti, and now you have the Darksaber, and I don't want to lose you." There it was. Bo's voice cracked, and Satine stood, shakily, to pull her sister into a hug. Even with most of her armor still on, Bo was good to hug. She was strong, and she held Satine up as her muscles trembled with exhaustion. "I wanted to kill him. He hurt me, and he hurt Obi-Wan, and he hurt our people. I wanted him dead, and the lightsaber was there, and I was the only person who could do it, and I..." "You did the right thing," Bo assured her, words comforting in spite of their source. "You're Mandalorian, Vod, whether you like it or not. You and I will never agree on what being a Mandalorian means." "Probably not, but I think today has more than proven that we both know what it isn't." "Does that mean I won't be receiving any challenges from your terrorist cell for my ill-gotten accessory?" They both pulled back from the hug and looked at the weapon on the table. Beau's hands were still on Satine, holding her steady by her shoulders. It was probably a testament to how worried Beau had been that she didn't contradict Satine's use of the word terrorist. After a moment, Beau said, "The Vizslas shared it among elite without bloodshed." Satine gave her her best scolding sisterly look. "We are not going back to the old way. And I think the last week has more than shown that if you continue trying to change Mandalore all at once, you will die. You need me. Take up the Darksaber and bring us home. My way didn't stop Mandalore from falling into civil war and losing our own to the wars of the Jaeti and Dar-Jaeti. Neither did yours. We need something new, together." Satine was entirely too exhausted to consider overthrowing her own government. "Tomorrow, Beau, please." Her sister's grin was cunning and wicked both. "Whatever you say, Mandalore." "Don't call me that." "Sith Slayer." "No." She was quiet, Obi-Wan's sort of daughter. Satine recognized so much of herself at that age in this lonely, traumatized girl. She watched as Ahsoka carefully counted every one of her belongings, tied the most valuable things to her body with string, created labels for where every item in her room belonged. "It gets easier," Satine assured her, on one of the rare occasions where Ahsoka was willing to speak about their mutual wound. "I've been doing this a lot longer than you've been alive, and I promise it gets easier. There are more things to be happy about, more people in the galaxy to love." She scuffed her heels on the floor. "At least I don't have a lightsaber to lose anymore. They almost arrested me after I was found innocent to make sure I wouldn't find a way to leave her with weapons or contraband. I've asked Rex to make sure nobody gives me anything she could use as a weapon." Satine had been forced to do the same once. She was lucky, profoundly, that there was no chance of her losing the Darksaber to him. Bo-Katan's sources suggested that Ty was dead, and Satine trusted her sister. There was, in point of fact, a part of her that wondered if Beau might be the reason that Ty was dead. She had certainly had the opportunity, and she was one of the few people living, Satine, Beau, Obi-Wan, who knew exactly what he had done. "That will get easier too. There are things in the world of greater value than the ability to swing a blade." "But I was good at that. I was a good Jedi." Satine wanted to strangle everyone on the Jedi Council, except for Obi-Wan. "Yes, you were, and you didn't deserve this, but you can be so many more things than a good Jedi, Asika." "I didn't want to be anything other than that." "Death to the Jedi Council," Satine decided. Bo-Katan would be thrilled by her new protective and murderous streak. In addition to hating the Jedi and advocating murder on principle, Beau had developed a somewhat ironic affection for Ahsoka. "You're allowed to grieve, you know, for the person you wanted to be." "You sound like my therapist." "That's because she was my therapist, too." Ahsoka let out a watery laugh and let Satine give her a protective side hug. "You're not allowed to die." Kit flicked his eyes open. The light from the skylight, filtered through the blue-green of the temple's saltwater pools, turned Bant's orange skin a reddish-brown color. The trouble with having trained Mon Calamari Padawans was that being underwater didn't actually provide any retreat from them. Next time he was going to take on a Padawan who didn't know how to swim at all, out of sheer spite. "Bant." She crossed her arms and glowered at him. "Not until you get as old as Master Yoda. I stood by the pyre of one master already. You're living to be 900. "I didn't really mean for the Sith to get as close as he did." She spun a jet of water at him with the Force, sending his headtails waving. "Well, too bad. Deppa and I have decided that we're starting a coup. You and Master Windu aren't allowed anywhere near that level of danger ever again." He could have admitted to her that none of the Jedi who had faced Darth Sidious were likely to see field combat ever again. Possibly not even Knight Skywalker, who was physically unharmed in the confrontation. But pointing that out would have been depressing, and teasing Bant was fun. "Oh, How are you planning on enforcing that? Have you seen Deppa's Padawan? We're not going to have any trouble enforcing it. Criff, that was a good point. There's a part of me, Padme confessed, voice low as if she carried the most terrible secret, that wishes he wasn't dead so I could kill him. I know exactly how you feel, Senator, Fox said. They were both standing at the doorway to the Chancellor's office, unable to enter. I'm going to have to go back in at some point. So much of her world was tainted already, with Palpatine's careful fingers having left their prints on everything, on Anakin and on the Republic, and even on these last few days of her pregnancy, which should have been happy ones. I don't think anyone would blame you if you didn't. I would. But neither of them went in. They stood there and stared at the closed door until approaching footsteps alerted them to the presence of two more supplicants coming to stare at the altar of their collective failure. Padme. It was Bail, of course. Fox. He put his hand on his commander's shoulder. It was generally understood that Fox was soulmates with one of the Organas. Even Padme didn't know which led her to suspect that it might, in fact, be both. Or perhaps that it didn't really matter which it was. Regardless, she was sure the match was a good one, proven by the way they stood close now, Bail acting almost as a bulwark between Fox and the world. After everything, Fox deserved someone who would fight to protect him with the same resilience and courage that he fought to protect them all. Bail and Brea could do that. Padme had to turn around to see that the second pair of footsteps belonged to Obi-Wan. She knew that he felt as grief-stricken and angry with the universe as she did, but he hid it better. I thought you were with Anakin. Padme left her husband in Obi-Wan's care, and her children in Sabe's, to come here and check up on her work. She hadn't meant to be swept into the sinister orbit of the Chancellor's office. I was, Obi-Wan admitted, but Quinlan, Master Voss, is with him now, and I thought it best to give them both some privacy. His words would probably have been more impactful if Padme had room in her head for the names of all the Jedi. Remind me. We almost lost him in deep cover with Dooku. He's a very dear friend of mine, and Ayla's teacher. Of course. So that's why you aren't there, but why you are here. Unlike the three of us, you aren't going to have to walk into that office ever again if you don't want to. I have to, Obi-Wan said gravely, because I am a Jedi and I cannot let him haunt me. And he stepped past all of them and opened the door to a very normal office. Someone had replaced the broken transparisteel window, had straightened the furniture, and even cleaned up the papers on Palpatine's desk. Padme had seen it after the fight, when she'd gone with Anakin to find Master Windu, and it had looked nothing like this. Her stomach churned, and she felt ill in a way that had nothing to do with her recent pregnancy. When she looked down at the floor, she could still see the bodies of each of the four Jedi Masters as she rushed from one to another to see if they were breathing. She still remembered dragging Windu away from the open window while Anakin called for the healers and had a panic attack in the doorway. I hate him, Fox whispered. It was, perhaps, the only volume appropriate for this moment. They'd discovered, after Palpatine's death, his true plans for the clones. It was, from an objective perspective, the most sickening part of this whole affair. Even if Padme's love for Anakin was more immediate to her, she could recognize the objective monstrosity of this meticulously planned double genocide, which would have killed the minds and spirits of the clones as much as the bodies of the Jedi. So do I. Obi-Wan, standing across the threshold, said, I can't hold on to hating him. That is not the Jedi way. No, it wasn't, and the last thing Anakin needed right now was for the rest of them to be stewing in their anger. It would be bad for the twins, too. Anakin and Obi-Wan both agreed that Luke and Leia were Force-sensitive enough to pick up on strong emotions, even at such an incredibly young age. Fox surveyed the group and said, Do you all want to go to the guards' training room and do something a bit more productive than this to relieve our anger? Sparring probably wasn't the best post-pregnancy activity, but Padme was absolutely aching to hit something, and doing it in a controlled environment, without Anakin, Luke, or Leia there to see it, was most likely the best possible approach. They must have had a punching bag she could use. Yes, please. And so Obi-Wan allowed the door to swing shut behind him, and they did. The end.
Hell was the journey, but it brought me heaven. Time, wonder is time. Give me the blues and that purple pink skies. And it's cool, baby, when me.